All right, so tonight I'd like to talk about these five hindrances. So the hindrances are interesting because they, I'll describe what they are in a little bit, but they're things that happen during our meditation, and there are also things that happen during our life. There are patterns that when we feel sleepy, sometimes we feel restless, like we can't sit still. Sometimes we find our minds really wanting something, this kind of leaning toward an experience. Sometimes moving away, like something's unpleasant, and we want to get away from it. We're kind of pushing ourselves away from something that we want to avoid. And there is also the quality of just confusion, of doubt, of not really knowing what I'm supposed to be doing or how I should be doing whatever I'm practicing. So these five hindrances come up again while we're practicing. And really, as you hear people's questions and as a teacher, as they hear people's questions, you can see, okay, there is a hindrance arising. A simple way we can look at it is if we set a course of going, okay, I want to just go this direction. I'm going to say that direction is just to focus on my breath without any deviation. Every time I notice that I kind of shift over one way or another, if we pay attention, we can often see one of the hindrances is present. And maybe I'm shifting because I want to follow that pleasant thought. Or maybe I'm shifting because I want to figure out that worry thought. Or maybe my body is just falling asleep and I'm just not sure where I am. Am I breathing in? Am I breathing out? Or perhaps I just feel like I can't sit still. There's so much energy coming through my system. So at first, it seemed like these are really hindrances. These are really obstacles to our practice. But I like to kind of reframe them when I teach about them as not as obstacles, but as actually something to learn to observe, to meet, to understand. Because again, they're going to come up in our meditation practice, but they also come up all the time in our daily lives. And learning how to meet them skillfully, to observe them, to actually use them as teachers is very helpful. So our practice so far has been learning how to have a steady attention. We looked at sound, we the breath, the sense of sensations in the body, learning how to have a steady attention, but also attention that is not trying to change that experience, to not try to quality of altering it or judging it, but really allowing it to be just what it is in that moment. Now, these three areas become a template that we can learn to bring toward more complex things like emotions and mental attitudes and beliefs, thought structure, and that's what we'll explore in the coming weeks, and including how we meet, you know, circumstances that are bigger than us, like a world that's grappling with COVID and all its complexity, to our internal, you know, angst or internal struggle. Now, this learning how to turn toward and meet things seems like it should lead to more calm and more clarity. And that's the overall direction, and it definitely does that. But sometimes as we're doing that, these hindrances start to arise. And so sometimes there's a sense that something's wrong with the meditation. We have this idea that something's failing it in some way. But really, again, the hindrances are part of the practice. In some ways, they actually show the practice is deepening. And the fact that you can see them means that you're having a greater clarity of mind than we often have access to in our normal life. So it's also important not to take these personally when they arise, not to add this story that somehow I've failed, that I've done something wrong. It's really, again, it's quite the opposite. It means the meditation is deepening. It is arising in a deeper way. And as we're practicing, we're learning to really develop this capacity of listening more and more deeply to our experience. And that very attitude of listening starts to allow the tension patterns in us to start to unwind. For those of you who are a little older, you remember the landline phones with the coiled receiver, you know, the coiled thing. And those often get really tangled up. And one way to untangle them was to just hang it upside down. It would start to twist and jerk as it would find its balance and eventually be untangled. And so meditation is a little bit like that, that we're sitting quietly, just meeting our breath with non-judgmental awareness, steady awareness, and we start to twitch and jerk as we start to untangle. Sometimes it shows up as physical movement, sometimes it's emotional, sometimes mental. But if you reframe it not as, oh, something's wrong in the meditation, to reframe it that, oh, I'm actually letting go of these patterns. These patterns are starting to move through me. And again, it's so important to try to hear this. Like when I teach meditation retreats, you see these same patterns happen, but because we're practicing all day, you can see someone goes through a period of stillness and quiet. Maybe the next time I talk to them, they're going through some of these hindrances and they're struggling. And it's almost like the silence itself invites that hindrance to start to release through us. Another analogy is like those lava lamps that would kind of bubble up and get to the surface first and then come back. It's like we're inviting this bubbling up in our experience to constantly arise and pass away. So let's look at these five hindrances, and my goal for you tonight is to help you recognize when those arise. So when you feel yourself struggling, when you feel yourself wanting to move one way or another, you might just step back and notice, okay, is the hindrance here? What hindrance is present? And just that little bit of stepping back and clarity of seeing gives you this perspective to be able to meet it and work with it. So the first one is craving or desire. So this is the wanting of what's pleasant, this movement toward. And this isn't a judgment about not follow. It's not about saying you should never want anything or not that you should ever desire things, but just noticing how we have a habitual habit of mind that we might be just intending to sit still, to meet our breath, and our minds are pulled one way or another. The hindrance is when it happens when we don't want it, when we don't have a lot of control over it. So it can be a very physical movement. It can be a mental movement or an emotional movement. You can get a sense of this, like next time let's say you like cookies and you put a cookie in front of you, you can feel the muscles want to fire to reach and get that cookie. You can, see you look, trying to distract yourself, but your eyes keep coming back to that cookie. This is the power of the hindrance pulling you back. Now you're meditating, it often shows up mentally, that your mind just keeps going toward that pleasant thought. It's like, oh, that was such a lovely vacation I took before COVID. I want to just hang out there a little bit longer. It has this allure, this pleasant quality. And it's this movement into the pleasant, into what's here. Now, the hindrances are interesting how they start to change the clarity of how we see. We can look at meditation as kind of the metaphor of clearly seeing and understanding what's being seen. We're trying to kind of clean up the lenses of our cameras, clean up our distortions so you can see very clearly. When I say see, I mean also sense clearly, perceive clearly. Now, if you look at this analogy of, let's say we have a camera crew that has this assignment of doing a documentary, or maybe a cultural anthropologist wants to kind of understand how a particular culture is in its own natural state without external influence. So the camera crew is just supposed to see clearly. Now, if the camera crew is caught by craving, the documentary is going to be really biased toward everything that's pleasant. They're going to be focusing on the beautiful things, the beautiful interactions, the beautiful artwork. That's going to be what they are going to constantly focusing on. So instead of having an unbiased, clear view, it's going to be really a biased view of things. And so that's one of the reasons to recognize a hindrance, because it really changes the way we're perceiving the moment. In some ways, it actually changes the very way we perceive the world. Our world becomes the thing that we want. We don't see everything else that's going on. So how to work with craving. So first, to notice when it arises. Again, we're talking about in a meditation standpoint, when it arises, to first recognize, oh, there's this leaning toward. I like to often, pause the actual action of leaning the actual thinking, the actual reaching, if you will, to going into the, what does it feel like to the impulse to move, the impulse to think around this pleasant quality, this pleasant object? You know, feeling the craving in and of itself. Another way to work with it is to intentionally notice the negative aspects of something that you're really wanting. Because we do get a little blind. We don't see the stuff that is imperfect or not so pleasant about what we want. We just see that the pleasant side of it. So kind of sobering up, looking at the whole picture of it. So that's craving. The next hindrance is that of aversion. So in some ways, aversion is the flip opposite, the flip of the coin, the other side of this picture. Instead of moving toward what's pleasant, we're moving away from what's unpleasant. It could be physical, it could be mental, it could be emotional. And this question came up, I think, last week or the week before, about why not just, you know, move away? You know, why, you know, you have an itch, you know, itch, like your back of your head is itching. Why not just scratch it? You know, why practice not scratching the itch? Why practice not relieving the aversive impulse? Right? So it's a great question because, you know, it's pretty simple just to scratch. But if we practice not scratching it, we start to be able to work and hold this habitual mind state that doesn't like things and has to do something about them. By not acting on it, we're starting to build our capacity to hold what's unpleasant and also start to not be so driven by it. Now, this becomes helpful in those things that we can't just easily scratch. Now, I can scratch an itch, but can I really scratch that chronic pain? Can I scratch that loss that's outside of my control? So by practicing in these easy, small ways, we start to build our capacity to meet the difficult aspects of life. We start to develop a capacity and a confidence to meet and be with. You know, as you know, Marilyn talked about in her question around with pain, is noticing that you start to dissolve that sense of me who's struggling with the pain itself becomes much more manageable. There's a sense of freedom and lightness that comes from that. Because so often our pain is amplified by how much reaction we have to it, how much we personalize it, how much we make it about us, about our future, about our past. These are all manifestations of aversion, of this movement away from something, this leaning away. So let's go back to our friends, the camera crew. So now if they're really caught in aversion, when they see something and they're trying to document this culture, they're going to just notice what's ugly, what's broken, what's not so pleasant. That's going to be a hyper vigilance around that. And so now the bias of the documentary or the research will show just all the stuff that's broken. It's not going to be a very balanced attitude. Now these two, just a quick aside, these two of aversion and craving. Sometimes people have a particular bias in their minds and their bodies, kind of just the way they're built. You might notice next time you walk into a new environment, what do you notice first? What draws your eye? You know, for some of us, we're kind of wired to really notice things we find pleasant, the things we find beautiful. It's like, oh, that's really lovely what they did. Other people, you know, again, there's no judgment one way or the other. We notice, oh, well, that rug's a little worn there, or there's a stain from the drywall, or whatever it might be. Just start to notice which way you tend to lean. And the reason to do that is you start to become more familiar with your habits of mind. The more you become familiar with it, you can start to have more freedom from it. You don't have to be so habitually locked into that pattern. And classically, the third type of person is that, you know, you walk into a room and you just kind of don't notice anything. You're just a little, you know, a little oblivious to everything. And we're often a mixture of these three. So again, craving and aversion. So working with aversion, let's go back to that part. So again, first noticing that aversion is present, I should say. And often when I'm experiencing something painful, again, in the body, in my mind, in my heart, my emotions, I like to just step back and notice, oh, this is painful. This is not my preference. This is not how I like this to be. And sometimes we just jump right over that and we're trying to fix it and struggle with it. Sometimes just that little bit of acknowledgement allows our hearts to connect, allows a quality of compassion to arise. We'll speak to compassion much more next week, actually, both in the talk and also in some of the meditations. So as similar to craving, one of the secrets is to learn to suspend the object that we're not wanting and step back into the actual almost generic sense of what does it feel to really not want itself? What does it feel like to move away? Instead of moving away from, we so much focus on what it is. Notice the actual act of moving away. Physical, mental, emotional. And learning to turn toward it with curiosity. Like, well, what is this really like? Physical pain is a great place to practice this. So notice, okay, let me see the actual sensations here. Maybe me for a moment stop relating to it as pain and relate to it as pressure or as warmth or as heat. And suddenly that allows you to just become curious and actually connect with what's here. And with aversion, again, sometimes it's a very charged thing. You know, sometimes our nervous systems are really, if we're kind of unprocessed trauma in our systems, for example, it can be helpful to intentionally turn towards something pleasant in your moment's experience. Turning toward it with intentionality. It's like, okay, in some ways, ignore this unpleasant thing for the time being so I can rebalance my mindfulness. We recover that quality of ease, of softness, turning towards something that's pleasant, like maybe my palms, maybe that sound of that bird, maybe some visual field. Till my mindfulness starts to relax, settle down. Then I can come back and touch that pain a little bit and go back and forth. So, craving, aversion. The next one, the third hindrance, is that of restlessness and worry. Restlessness and worry. So restlessness is kind of the physical component of that we can't sit still. You may notice that sometimes you're sitting and I can't sit a second longer. I have to move. I have to shift out of this position. Sometimes it takes a mental component that we get lost in our worry mind, our anxious mind. You know, what will happen? What might happen? And our minds really get this kind of closed loop, just keeps thinking over and over again. And sometimes restlessness can be just kind of moving out of our systems. Again, back to that, when I talked about right at the beginning, as we practice, we start to allow tension to start to unwind. So sometimes you feel like your whole body is vibrating or there's this excess of energy that's building up. So learning to relax with that, you know, opening the eyes, softening the body can be very helpful. Sometimes you can stand up in the middle of a meditation. If it just feels like I can't sit a second longer, stand up and switch to standing meditation, as we explored last week, or do some walking meditation. And then after that settles down, come back into sitting practice. Now the mental worry, that the mental component, the worry part, that part's in some ways a little harder to work with because it's so defines who we are, what we take to be real. So there's a analogy that we often use. Let's say we're all taking a walk or a hike at dusk, and we see this coil of rope in the distance. But it's kind of dusk, so we can't see very clearly. So we think maybe it's not a coil of rope, maybe it's actually a rattlesnake. Let's say we're in a part of the country where there's rattlesnakes. So then we start to worry that, okay, what if that rattlesnake bites me? You know, how quickly can I get help? Maybe I can't get help and I'll end up losing that leg. God, if I lose that leg, you know, and I can't walk, how am I going to do my work? You know, my loved ones will start to shun me. I'll lose my spouse. You know, pretty soon this whole world is created based on this sense data, seeing this coil of rope, mistaking it for being a snake. So this is kind of a really over the top example, but we do this all the time. You just notice how your mind takes one little thing. It could be a sound, it could be a text, it could be an email, it could be a grimace from a friend, and you make this whole story around it. And then maybe eventually you realize that story was all fabricated, wasn't based in any kind of reality. But yet we spent all that time worried, lost in thought. You know, as Leah mentioned with that, kind of realized I took a shower without realizing I was present. So often we're in that worry, in the middle of that. You know, so that in that moment, okay, I was lost in that worry thought. I was lost in the fantasy thought. So learning how to wake back up, to come right back here into this moment. So the sense of the camera crew. Now the camera crew now is really kind of, it's not still, it's shaking as it's seeing things. So it's moving, it's seeing something, it's kind of vibrating, so it's not a very clear picture. Might be vibrating in response to something that's pleasant, that they really want. Could be vibrating in response to something that's unpleasant. So sometimes restlessness and worry can be kind of reactions to other things. And that, yes, you can have multiple hindrances attack. You can have craving that turns into restlessness, that turns into aversion, and you start to have all of these things swirling around. And sometimes restlessness just kind of unwinds from our bodies, like that lava lamp releasing. So how to work with it? So feel it, you know, first of all, feel it as an experience. Okay. Notice, okay, restlessness is here. I just can't sit still. See if you can relax with the fact that you're restless. You know, this is a little more challenging because you're asking yourself to be still with something that's every impulse is to move, is to do something else with. But can I just be still with this? Try to relax the whole body. Maybe open the eyes so it kind of broadens the visual field. That's similar to, you know, another comment around hearing. Sometimes we hear with too tight of a focus, and learning to hear like the whole body is receiving those vibrations. That can help balance that, you know, that experience of sound. In this case, the experience of the hindrance. Sometimes emphasizing the exhale can help calm the system. So just bring more attention to it, maybe lengthen the exhale a little bit. So that's restlessness and worry. Now the fourth hindrance is that of sloth and torpor. So this has a wide range, and we don't use sloth and torpor very much in our normal English these days. But it's a nice description of kind of that dullness, that lethargy, that lack of energy, to outright sleepiness, to outright falling asleep. And it can have that drifty quality that you can't quite tell. Like I think Kelsey was talking about that quality. Am I quite awake? Am I quite sleepy? That's that sinking mind. And it can be kind of seductive because it is kind of pleasant. Like, oh, that was a nice meditation. I wasn't quite sure where I was, but I was... It went by fast, you know. And as meditators, we do need a little bit of firmness around sleepiness, this willingness to, okay, I'm going to meet this and I'm going to try to wake up as best I can. Now, sometimes the conditions, you know, sometimes I'm practicing late at night and I'm just falling asleep every other breath, it feels like. And then you have to make a choice, like, is it better just to sleep or do I want to keep kind of working with that sleepiness? Sometimes sleepiness arises when you're well rested, when you have plenty of sleep. Sometimes it arises when you're dealing with a lot of stress, when you're dealing with a lot of grief. You know, these are all reasons that sleepiness arises. Sometimes it's helpful to ask, what would I be feeling if I wasn't sleepy? What would I be feeling if I wasn't sleepy? Because sometimes sleepiness can be this sneaky quality of kind of shutting down the system. I remember when I was in a competitive swimmer in high school, I would be very nervous about swimming meets. So my way of coping was just to take naps on the way to the meets, just to fall asleep on the bus, disconnecting from the experience, avoiding feeling that uncomfortableness of nervousness. So this isn't always, always the case, but sometimes just ask, especially if you're struggling with sleepiness or not a lot, is there something I'm avoiding feeling? What would I feel if I wasn't sleepy? Also ask, am I taking good care of myself? Am I getting enough rest? Am I trying to force myself too much? Sometimes sleepiness has to do with the time of day that you meditate. Sometimes, late at night is harder. Sometimes it's easier. Sometimes morning's easier. Sometimes harder. And so sometimes tweaking the timing if you can. So camera crew, the apertures close down. There's not enough light getting in. So everything's dull. It's not very clear. Now, sleepiness is one of the hindrances that there's lots of strategies for because it's such a common struggle. So my favorite one is to meet it just as another experience. Okay, what is it like to be falling asleep? What does it feel like? What does it really feel like in the body, in the mind? And that in itself can sometimes bring more energy. Now, other strategies are to open your eyes. That brings more energy. And you can, instead of gazing around, just kind of look ahead of you for a few inches, a few feet with a soft gaze. Sometimes you can, what I like to do is interlace my fingers so I have a little bit of a tactile feedback. If I don't let the circles touch, then I'm awake. But if I start to fall asleep, then they touch and that kind of wakes me back up. One of the best strategies is to stand up in the middle of the meditation and just spend a few minutes in standing meditation. That often wakes us up. And then again, making sure you're having enough sleep, enough rest in your life. Okay, now the final hindrance is of doubt. So this can have a form of confusion, of uncertainty. I'm not sure what's going on. And this is a very much a mental component. And it really has a convincing element to it that it can undercut our whole practice because we're not sure, is this the right practice? I'm not doing this right. Or, maybe I should be doing something different. The camera crew here just isn't sure what they're supposed to be focusing on. There's just a lot of doubt about how to be doing this. So with this hindrance of doubt, it's often helpful to get help. And the help could be, asking a question in the class. It could be in a small group, just voicing that this is what's going on. That brings more clarity to it. Sometimes getting inspired, like listening to a talk, taking a class like this is a refresher, reading a Dharma book. All of these things can bring more clarity and more interest to your practice. And sometimes doubt is really a natural part of practice that we all, as we deepen our practice, go through these levels of doubt. We kind of get to this kind of almost blind alley. And that's why so much of my time as a teacher is helping people navigate those areas of doubt. Because sometimes we're practicing in a way that just creates more struggle. And having the perspective of my training and my experience, I can sometimes point that out. So if you can find a teacher who can do that for you, that's ideal. So these five hindrances of craving, of aversion, of restlessness, worry, of sloth and torpor, and doubt, again, they come up in our meditation. We see them more clearly, but they also come up in our lives. And so start to learn to deal with non-resistance. I often like to think of them as a weather system that's just moving through our minds and bodies, just like, here in Seattle. Some days, right now it's much warmer. A couple of weeks ago it was, below freezing. And just these weather systems based on conditions go through our system. So sometimes you're sleepy, because you're overworked or you're whatever it might be. Sometimes you're more anxious because you're struggling. Sometimes you're more gripped by craving. And the more we get upset by those, the more difficulty we have. But if we can start to have this attitude of almost a nonchalant, just noticing this weather system moving through us, the easier these hindrances are to navigate. Even start to reframe them as teachers, as something to learn from. And just to close, if I can find this, yes. There's this common used teaching poem by Rumi called The Guest House that captures a beautiful attitude toward these hindrances and any struggle that comes up. This being human is a guest house. Every morning, a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they are a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still, treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice. Meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whatever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. All right, just sit quietly for a moment or two, letting those words settle.